legal point of view, it wasn't as the law was defined then. But that, I think, is not the that's not the end of the technical legal answer, because what do we have since? Of course, we have measures defining a crime against humanity as including slavery. Equally, we have UN conventions, the Council of Europe conventions, banning the trafficking in persons, which contain a precise definition of forcing someone to be transported against their will and then exploited for various purposes, which obviously cover every aspect of the slave trade. So the question is whether or not we can apply those concepts, which are recognised internationally, all treaties ratified by a large number of states, whether or not we can apply those concepts retroactively. And while the normal rule is that you cannot apply criminal law retroactively, there's an exception to that in international human rights law, where there's issues relating to the crimes against humanity and so on. So that is a means by which you can argue that even from a technical legal point of view, slavery should be regarded as illegal. So in that sense, without limitation backwards in time, that's the way forward, I would think, to at least the starting point from trying to, if you're actually thinking about making a claim and actually thinking about making an argument in some other form, that's the basis of a technical legal argument that can actually be made. The problem comes then, once you've argued criminal liability, of course, who bears the criminal liability? Normally, of course, criminal law is directed at establishing the liability of natural persons. It does us no good today to say that the slave traders or the politicians which signed the Royal Charter are criminals, since they've all died beyond the capacity to prosecute. And clearly, criminal liability can't be passed on to their descendants. The question is, though, whether criminal liability might exist as regards corporations, or it might exist as regards states. But there are hurdles to overcome. There's a lack of consensus on the degree to which states could have individual criminal liability as such. Well, it's not ruled out. I mean, there's a capacity to argue that such a thing does exist, and there's arguments over corporate criminal liability, whether it even exists under the law of some states, though it does, and under the law of some other states it doesn't. And then if that is the case, you've got questions of statutes of limitations and changes of legal personality and so on. But at least you have got a starting point, I think, to start from. It's to start from international human rights law and laws against trafficking persons, and to argue that there is no backwards limitation on the criminal liability which they create. And I think it's important to recognise that as the starting point. A couple of brief arguments, brief other comments. As regards trade, I think it might be useful to go down the route of saying that trade is a remedy. A couple of issues with that, though. Of course, the UK as such doesn't have the power to have its own trade policy. It's conferred that upon the European Community, and whatever crimes the European Community is responsible for, it's hard to say it's responsible for slavery. So it would be the European Community that would have to make a response. And of course, the European Community has in fact had a trade policy historically which has created greater preferences since the early 1970s for developing countries in general, but greater preferences for most of that period for African, Caribbean, Pacific countries. The problem, as you heard, of course, is that we now are in the era of economic partnership agreements. What's important to recognise historically is that your community didn't come up with these ideas by itself, economic partnership agreements. The WTO pushed it into the position where it could no longer, the community could no longer have one-way trade liberalisation. The WTO dispute settlement body said that WTO rules don't allow for one-way trade liberalisation. It has to be mutual trade liberalisation or a general preference for developing countries. The EU has offered to African, Caribbean and Pacific countries the alternative of having an EPA on one hand and liberalising their trade and investment perhaps on the other hand, joining the general regime for community trade preferences for developing countries. And very few of the ACP states have chosen that second group, which which I think is unfortunate. Maybe more of them should have done, but for whatever reason, the majority have chosen to go down the route of negotiating an EPA, and maybe the committee shouldn't have given them that choice. Maybe they should have just said, we're going to just transfer you to the general preferences on trade for developing countries. But the question of remedies in this context would be, how do you get around the problems of the EPA? What are the human rights recommendations you would make as a remedy? It's not just the... You can't just recommend to the community that it rescind the EPAs, denounce them, and transfer developing African, Caribbean, Pacific countries to the general rules on trade, because the African, Caribbean, Pacific countries at least appear to want an EPA. Perhaps they were coerced into that in some way, but they appear to be willing, at least however much they are pushed, into signing an EPA. So. What the real problem is the underlying rule in the World Trade Organization that the community couldn't offer the generous one-way trade liberalization it was offering under the prior Lomé conventions, which obviously wasn't as generous as it could have been, but it was still was a one-way benefit that it no longer can give. So trying to solve the problem is not just as simple as recommending the state to liberalise their trade regimes. It's a whole system within the WTO that would have to change, and that of course leaves outside the question of investments and so on, and development aid and several other issues which are financially related. So it would only be trade alone, I think, that solves the problem, and there's a limit to what you can do on trade. One final comment, I think two little final comments. I think what we were missing today was an economic historian, or someone who could at least summarise what the state of research is in terms of economic history, to have some kind of estimate as to how things would be different if there hadn't been a transatlantic slave trade, or at least somebody who could begin to think about modelling that. It would be fascinating to hear what the conclusions would be. And linked to that is my suggestion of what we may not need so much, what may be better than a court case, in the long run, at least, a court case might be useful. What might be better than a court case is to have some kind of consensus on having some kind of truth commission or some kind of independent body, whether it's a national or international body, which could try and establish the facts about what is the impact of the total number of people we could estimate being affected, what's the economic impact, how would the African economy be different as compared to the European economy, the American economy, in the alternative, and that on the basis of that, we could make recommendations or even be given a mandate to reach conclusions about. Make decisions about reparations, and even if there's a non-binding recommendation, I think the existence of such a body might be sort of very useful as a central point in the framework, and perhaps states would be more willing to listen to the recommendations of a body having gone through that process of collecting the information and the testimony and publicising it. At the very least, it would have a useful value in terms of international publicity and recognition of the history of slavery. Thanks very much.